warm welcome to Rake the Moon, Episode 9. On we stride like Ollie Clark into an opposition penalty area, waiting to be mauled by a Bristolian defence. Coming up, we'll have a double dose of number crunching, how are Swindon performing compared to the points target required to escape the fourth tier, plus the price of football. I'm not Kieran Maguire, neither is Sam, and we'd have a weird obsession with teams at the ends of the A23 if we were. We will peek into the accounts. First, though, after the banter section, the life and times of the town in part 436. Hello, Sam. So we've made it to episode 9, and in honour of that, I thought I'd ask you something a little bit more simple for this week's banter section, in quotes, as always. Your favourite Swindon Town number 9s, and I'm prepared to allow, generously, centre-forwards as a whole, not specifically people who have worn the 9 shirt.
It's a split for me. This is quite an easy question because you get asked it quite a lot, don't you, in general as a Swindon fan. It's a split for me between Steve Finney, who scored all the goals that first season that I got hooked watching the club, and Sam Parkin, because I just enjoyed a lot of him as a footballer and obviously got to know him a fair bit as a guy in the media, and just in every department, he's top notch. So, yeah, a combination of the two for me. What about you?
Yeah, no, that's a nice choice. It's lovely to hear Steve Finney, God rest his soul, get a mention, because he did sort of settle in so well in that season, didn't he? He just started off scoring and didn't really stop. I have to say, I think he did wear the number 9, unless my brain's going completely wrong, but Fjortoft Senior, as I should probably now call him. It's the whole kind of couldn't score, couldn't stop scoring, and, you know, kind of goals in the top flight as well. So, you know, like equalizers against Manchester, and just a kind of quite a funny and entertaining interviewee as well. So Steve White gets a very honourable mention too, but it's strange to have kind of watch them, and then I'm sure you know this feeling, Sam, having come across them a little later in sort of commentary boxes or wherever, and get to know them a little bit. And we're really both quite lucky in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, they say don't meet your heroes, but that's not universally applicable, and I think this is a good example of it. And there's a few guys there that you've named who are who were both fantastic footballers and great ambassadors for the club, and are terrific human beings as well. So, yeah, we do get a lot of privileged access to people who make the headlines, and sometimes it's quite easy to forget that amongst all the rigmarole of other parts of the job.
Footballers, they can be nice. So let's dip back into Saturday, in a sense, Swindon-Bristol Rovers, very healthy crowd in. 12,000, not just over 10,000 Swindon fans coughing up their very hard-earned cash to go and see a one-all draw that I think we both somehow have come to the independent conclusion wasn't as bad as other people thought, but maybe more on the football bit later. Obviously, we had the streamers coming out of the town end, and during the week we had the whole saga of the kind of club statement on the fact those sort of there are restrictions on those tour blocks, kind of T1 and T2, that were almost sounding like, I feel a bit like a dentist kind of chatting to their assistant there. T1, that's all right. T2, not so good. But anyway, those sort of two blocks have been closed. So how did you kind of find the atmosphere, and what's your sense of the state of the town end after those streamer-led efforts to revive it?
Well, it's great, isn't it, that there are fan-led efforts to do this sort of things, and there have been examples in the recent past of similar efforts, and all the TIFOs, you think of Great Western Reds and what they put into the trying to make an additional atmosphere to the stadium and away from home as well. And it does bring something different, and the players certainly do appreciate it, and it does give an additional little bit of motivation for them, as if they need it anyway in a promotion chase. I think that the really interesting thing here around the town end is that there is an opportunity for the club to lay a marker down about what they are capable of delivering in terms of a maintenance, investment, you know, redevelopment aspect prior to presumably a second vote among trust members on the proposals for the DRS, which you would think would come again in the summer months, because they keep saying that they need to have this upgrade to allow for non-match day revenue and to increase the chances of them reaching something resembling sustainability. And we can all have our all have our different opinions on that. But certainly that the Townend now does present them with a fantastic chance to prove that they actively can create something that enhances the match day experience, improves the stadium, that is in line with relevant safety requirements, and that they can deliver it quickly, so that if, for example, if there was a playoff game that was required at home, that the Townend could be full to capacity, and that anybody who wanted to attend the game could go there and fall in love with the atmosphere of having 13,000 plus people inside the County Ground. And I think that this is the key bit here. And instead, we're still stuck in this swinging elbows of defensiveness between council and club about whose responsibility it was for under 18s to be disallowed from buying tickets in T1 and T2. And instead of it engaging actively, proactively, we're still having this defensive situation. And I just think that it should be now seen as a huge opportunity for Swindon Town to win over some doubters in an area which, you know, they do as their day jobs, these guys. Clem Mulfooney runs a business in multiple countries that does maintenance and development projects, construction projects. And Anthony Hall, the chief exec, has always been one of his right-hand men throughout the time that he's been building these companies around the world. And so they've got experience in the sector, and they say, to show the fans that they should deserve the opportunity to redevelop the County Ground. The fans would need a reason to see that proof, because there's been limited amounts so far, because a lot of the work that they do or have done has been more safety side or more infrastructure rather than something that would have a tangible impact directly to everybody on a match day. So this is the chance. Like, get the work done as quickly as you can, get kids back in the town end, or at least fill the town end, and show that there is an appetite on the club side to contribute to a collaborative way forwards. And then if they do that, there should be an expectation at that point on fans to recognise that sort of effort, that commitment and delivery, and then vote yes to a redevelopment project, which obviously over the medium term would deliver more revenue, which would enhance the club's financial situation. But the stumbling block here is always going to be people allowing themselves to be won over. And if you don't produce any evidence of it, then that's not going to happen. And last week I was really negative about the possibility, but I've kind of been won around to the idea that this is an out opportunity for everybody here to be reasonable and to show that there is a collaborative way forward. So the Bristol Rovers game gave a great indication, because Townend was more full and obviously a little bit more vibrant thanks to the efforts of the fans. And it's great to see streamers being chucked around and there to be a lot more of a buzz about the place. And that just brought me around to the idea that, yeah, proper match days are possible. So can the club deliver something that enhances it in a short period of time to help them with their future goals? But look, it was great, wasn't it, regardless, just to see the County Ground nearly full, because we haven't seen that at all since, what, Wrexham in 2023?
Which is a bit of a kind of slightly freakish case, isn't it, due to their profile. But no, I feel like if we've talked about the long-term Mexican standoff, I would say on Saturday, it felt like certainly, you know, the efforts with the streamers, the numbers who attended, the noise generated, that was, you know, you could interpret that as an olive branch, if I'm not mixing too many metaphors.
Yeah, look, 10,000 home fans is a really good number for any club in League Two. Obviously, you get some exceptions like Bradford when they've been down there that put on tickets at such affordable rates that you're naturally going to get a lot more people through the gate. But it's such a good number of home fans. So yes, there was a willingness to engage. Of course, the question will be how many of those come back for an equally massive game in 10 days' time. But even so, there was an opportunity there to recognize that people still are willing, and that's really key. And I think that's step one. I think step two is for the club to show if they want to have the authority from the supporter base to do the work that is definitely needed, then they need to win back skeptical fans. And I think, you know, proof of concept, i.e. do a smaller project in good time to the benefit of everyone associated with the club, I think that's a great chance. Of course, I come into this discussion not armed with numbers about how much that would cost, or not even specifically what the issues are that need to be rectified, because no one will actually say precisely what they are, just that children get trampled. And I think that there is a chance for them to work towards something in the near future. And I'm trying to remain optimistic about that rather than my Eeyore impression of last week.
Oh dear, have you doom spiraled after listening back to us?
I did a bit. I did a bit. It was a busy week last week, moving house and trying to take two small children and a cat along for the ride. And I think maybe I got a bit too morose in that one. I think some of the key points around it still remain, but I have seen an opportunity here. And I think that there is a great chance for the club to make it very difficult for fans to reasonably say no to a future development if they deliver something smaller, quickly and well in advance of that.
And if Sam is sounding a little echoey, as you may have noticed, not to an indubitable degree, that is partly due to you still not having fully furnished your new office, I would imagine, in premium mode, and having to deal with the very random nature of your cat.
Yeah, well, the cat came in screaming, announcing its most recent kill just before we started recording. But now I'm trying to mitigate this by sitting in front of my desk with a blanket covering my my whole self. It doesn't seem to be doing a great deal of difference, but apologies, the acoustics will slowly improve over time.
The sacrifices we make for podcasting. Okay, time for some number crunching, but let's do the fun football part first. So Swindon, after the weekend, are sitting there with 62 points, 11 games to go. Bromley bestriding the table, 68 points. Cambridge 64, MK Dons 62. Swindon 62, Notts County 61. Crewe kind of meandering up on 56, but it looks something like 3 from 5, or 5.5 if you want to count Salford as well, with Swindon having played a game more than most of the sides around them. So I've been doing a bit of checking. So for the past 5 years of League Two, 80 points has been enough to get you into third place. Although one season that was better goal difference. So 80 points is probably the minimum target for automatic promotion. And playoffs really varies. Anything between 70 and 76 points has been required to get into the playoffs. That 76 points was when Swindon were in there and everyone was doing very well, and Sutton were pretty unlucky to miss out, and look what happened to them. Anyway, I'm getting distracted. What does this tell us, Sam? It tells us that there possibly is, even now, a little bit more margin for error than it feels like. Is that fair?
So increasingly, I think it's going to be a low bar for both playoffs and automatic. Like historically, if we take history being a post-lockdown season, I think there's a very good chance that 80 will be enough for third, maybe even less, going by the way that teams are playing against each other. I think that playoff-wise, there's so many teams that are inconsistent that it might even be less than 70 points to get in. So with that in mind, I mean, I'm very, very confident Swindon will be in the playoffs. I think to such an extent that I've already warned my wife that May is not a good time to book anything. It's sort of, I feel like a fourth place finish is on the cards at the moment. That's my gut. But I think that it's going to be tight and down to the wire. And the games between the top eight are going to be so crucial. I mean, people talk about six pointers as the old cliche, but Swindon have two to three, depending on what Walsall end up doing, and depending, I guess, what Grimsby end up doing. But for Bromley play, I think, is it like the last four games are all against teams towards the top end? And so they could have a very direct impact on the whole thing. It's also why I have this nagging suspicion that they're going to fall out into the playoffs as well. But yeah, I think that it's going to be tight and it's going to be a lower bar than usual. We're not seeing too many teams doing the runaway thing that we have seen at times over the recent seasons. And whilst teams have threatened and Swindon have threatened on a couple of occasions, winning four or five in a row, there's not a team that's going out and romping and doing something truly spectacular. So it's definitely on for any of those top five. It's definitely on for any number of teams for the playoffs if they can put together a run. But these teams in this division, they're not separated by much from top to nearly bottom. There is a real similarity in the way in which they're going about their seasons. I just don't see there being enough consistency for it to have any runaways. So, yeah, I think it's going to be tight. It's going to be nervy. Do you think they've got it in them to get into the top three?
Well, I was kind of looking at that 80 points, and it does kind of reassure me. For the record, Bromley's last four games are MK Dons away, Cambridge at home, Salford away, Walsall at home. I guess their plan is to be that far in front by that time that they have enough of a cushion. But so 18 points could be, from these last 11 games, five wins, three draws, three losses.
Yeah, it's just getting the wins in early, isn't it? What they don't want to end up doing is knowing they have to go to Grimsby and then have Chesterfield at home and have to get 4 points from them to if they're going to do the automatics. I mean, that's going to be difficult because Grimsby and Chesterfield are likely both going to be still pushing for seventh at that point. So this is where the frustrations of some of the recent weeks have come in, or some of the recent weeks of the last 2.5 weeks, because they've obviously dropped points in three matches, and even another 3 points from those three matches would make such a big difference. But we could be saying that about any one of these teams in this race at the moment. And there are unexpected weekends, unexpected match days popping up all over the place. It was only Bromley who won out of everybody on Saturday, and then that Barnet midweek win for Swindon was the only one that was a victory for a top six team on that evening. They seem to be giving each other the best possible chance, which should make for a really exciting run in. But it also underlines just how odd League Two is this year.
Yeah, I don't think there's a massive amount between the top and the bottom. I think even if you look at sort of Swindon's two wins over Newport, for example, 1-0 away, which was quite hard work after Ollie Palmer scored. Newport had a bit of a go. And then even that 2-0, Swindon didn't actually kind of generate a massive amount of chances. And it's the world's greatest own goal kind of polish that off. So I think this is another thing. People do kind of say, well, it's a long time since we really kind of had a comprehensive 90-minute performance. I'm not sure the nature of the league is like that, even for the good teams. Perhaps you look at the kind of Bromley game, and Swindon were clearly the better side for 45 minutes, and then Bromley were clearly the better side for the other 45 minutes. So the idea of League Two matches sort of being smooth and controlled, I'm just not sure it's the nature the nature of the beast. But 5 wins, 3 draws, and 3 defeats, as long as you don't lose to Cambridge and MK, it sounds kind of a bit more plausible than perhaps the mood is.
I think you can lose to one of them if you beat the other one.
I'd rather not like to find out.
Well, this is based on my theory that Bromley are going to fall out of it. So by beating at least one of them, you're then going to jump into that top three. So I think obviously I can be proven entirely wrong. Bromley go and win their next 5 and effectively wrap up promotion before we even get to Easter. But I'm just so convinced that it's going to be so draining for them across this season that they won't hang on. As much as I would love them to go up. 3 defeats. What's happened in the last 11 games? That's a good question. No. Bet you don't have prepared right in front of you.
No, you are testing me.
I'm going to say 5 wins, 5 draws. 5 wins, 5 losses, 1 draw.
So over the last 11, we have 5 wins, draw, and 5 defeats. So that's where does that push us up to? That pushes up to us
78.
So that possibly is 1 win.
That's 4th place.
1 win short. So you've got to dig out a little bit more over these last games. I do think you look at Crawley coming up and Tranmere coming up over this month and think, you know, you've really got to knock those over certainly. So that puts some pressure on Saturday. The other side to my perhaps undue optimism is the Opta predictions for what they're worth in terms of the sides who will go on to clinch promotion. I can tell you the stats crunchers, and you have a profound disagreement on Bromley, who they consider 94.5% likely to be promoted. Cambridge on a very healthy 73.6%, MK Dons 56%, Notts County 35.9%, Swindon 26.2%, therefore a top three finish. So I guess with the game more, you see Swindon as the outsiders of 5, but after pseudo experiencing Bradford at the end of last season, that just tells me chaos is most likely.
How would I opt to put that together? Is that a expected goals thing?
I think it's largely a kind of expected goals, expected points sort of analysis. So I think Swindon were about 40% a couple of weeks ago. So it can bounce around quite radically depending on how predictions and reality cross each other, as it were.
Yeah. Look, I'd be delighted if I can turn around to my wife at the end of May, or sorry, the end of April, beginning of May, and say, oh, we've got an extra 3 weekends here. But my gut instinct is to have block booked out all what I think are going to be the match days for May. So I hope to be proven wrong. And if it doesn't end up in even the playoffs, well, I hate to even think about that. Let's try not.
We'll all be hiding in a darkened room for about three weeks in May, let alone doing anything else.
Yeah, let's not think about that right now.
And finally, while we're in number crunching mode, to Swindon's accounts for the 2024-25 year, they show a loss of around £2.5 million. For the season that saw Swindon, Appointee and Holloway and spring from the bottom to glorious mid-table, and the amount of loans that Clem Morfuni has put in to help sustain the club now, £10 million worth of owner loans. So I guess we know generally, looking at League Two accounts, I think Barrow lost £500,000 last season, that it is a struggle to make clubs sustainable at this level. In fact, relying on benefactors seems pretty much essential for the entire league.
Yeah, well, 100%. I mean, it's become similar to a lot of how recreational organisations operate, and it relies on the fondness of people who regularly want to contribute to what's going on. There are ways that it could be a little bit less ominous on the club, you know, in terms of putting cash in as equity rather than as loans, but those loans do exist at zero interest. It is not unusual in football for a club to be in this financial situation. It's not unusual within League Two for clubs to be super reliant on loans coming into the business from its owners. You think about Colchester, which has got, you know, it's got debt of nearly £40 million to Robbie Cowling. And there was a recent study that indicated that more than 50% of clubs in the bottom reaches of the EFL are technically insolvent, as Swindon is technically insolvent. Its debt burden is greater than the sum of its assets. That this is the peculiarity of the football industry is this has become normalized when most businesses would look at this and be going, well, we're in real trouble here. So the questions around whether this is normal, yeah, it's unfortunately it is normal. Are there ways out of it? There are some ways out of it, but it still kind of relies on generosity because it would require more for you to write that debt off and to just put cash into the business by issuing himself new shares and getting equity. I don't know whether that's something that he would ever consider. It's a difficult situation to look at, and it's only going to grow because this is evidently the business model that he has chosen to operate his football club. And these accounts obviously only covered the period to May 2025, and we are nearly a year on, and those debts are probably more like 12.5 to 13 million at this point. The loans owed to Morfuni are more like 12.5 to 13 million at this point. And that's going to keep growing. And the question is, what's the off-ramp for him? Does he want an off-ramp? And does he ever want his money back? He might say it's not thinking about it, and he has said that on the record as on several occasions, and they're saying that this is just the business model that they're using. But certainly looking from the outside, you can understand why supporters get wary and a bit nervous about it. It gets to the point, like, if he's looking to sell, does it substantially inflate his valuation of the business if he wants to be repaid these millions of pounds for a business that is definitely not worth eight figures? Does he expect to get eight figures, and not just eight figures, you know, 12, 15 million pounds for a business that is probably worth around, I don't know, six, maybe? I think that if he's going to be able to build it into a club in the future that's in the Championship, things sort of change, but to get there, he's going to have to put in so much more money as loans anyway, because of the fact that he's going to have to finance the redevelopment of the County Ground in totality. And then there's a question of how does he get by financial fair play rules if you're only allowed to spend 50% of your turnover, or 60% in the league above, of your turnover on wages, and loans do not count towards this. You could put equity in, and it would 50% of that would count, or 60% of that would count towards the budget. But there's lots of things coming into it that just indicate that for this club to progress with him, it's going to require him to slightly shift his model. I can't see it being sustainable for him, and certainly not sustainable for the club over a period of several years. But he does seem still very adamant that he's in control and he wants to take it forward. So this is the way that it's going to be, and I think that we just have to get used to it. But yeah, you can understand it, can't you? When fans look at it and go, we owe our owner X amount of money, and that X is more money than we will ever possibly have in our lives, that's quite a hard thing to digest, I think.
He's always very, very kind of clear that there's no real desire to put it in as equity. I think whenever he's questioned, either on the, you know, video or at the various fans forum, this feels like a naive question, but I just wonder how a club hemorrhages so much. It's not as if they're bursting with administrative staff or so on and so forth. And yet, I know it's a pattern across the league. How How do football clubs hemorrhage so much money? Is it principally the pursuit of successful players and the wages they can command, or
They're limited,
or just not generating sufficient off pitch income?
Well, I mean, that is part of it. Swindon doesn't generate anywhere near enough non-match day revenue, but in terms of the overall administrative costs, we don't get a full breakdown of accounts. That stopped happening at Swindon. I think initially when Morfini took over with Rob Angus as the chief exec, there was a period where full accounts were published. But if you go back to the last ownership where it was sort of a regular event, would have been the Andrew Black ownership, I think. So under Fitton, they were publishing full accounts. So you get a good idea of the breakdowns. Right now, it's hard to know exactly what the breakdowns are. And beyond what we know of, you know, the playing budget being around £3 million, or what we know around of turnover being around about £6.5 to £7 million, there's not a lot more that we know specifically about where the money goes. Obviously, there is non-footballing staff, there is all the coaching staff, so on and so forth, that don't count towards the playing budget. But there will be other elements in terms of the match day operation, policing, in terms of maintenance costs, electricity rates, which we know have obviously started to go up, though I'm not sure whether that is applicable to football stadiums. Electricity has gone up considerably over the past 3 to 4 years. There have been an increase in NI contributions from employers that also start to impact, and minimum rate wage hikes as well. Obviously, football clubs have a lot of minimum wage match day staff. All of these things do contribute. But unless we have a clear breakdown of where all of the cash is going, then it's kind of speculative. And journalistically, I'm happy to speculate, but I would be guessing, and I'm not sure I want to just be guessing. Without the clear information, you can't give a clear answer. And I guess that plays into the hands of those who think things are going on that shouldn't be. But I've seen very little indication of that. What I see is a business that struggles for cash flow, that gets itself in a bit of a pickle chasing improvements that it hasn't been able to manage over 5 years. And I think its failure to progress in most directions during the Morfini era is having a knock-on impact now in terms of where they are financially. He was anticipating being in a position in League One where he could be starting to think about a promotion challenge, and instead they're still fighting it out to find a way to get out of League Two. And all of this comes with not insignificant commercial impacts. Being in the league above does generate more cash commercially. It does generate more cash on match day. It does generate more cash through sponsorship revenue and TV revenue and all of that sort of thing. So it would help to be up a division quite considerably. It would help if he hadn't lost 1,000, 1,500 regular match going fans, because they bring with them an average of around about £15 to £17 spend per head on a match day. There's a lot of things going on there, which maybe in year one or after year one, after that playoff season, he would have thought, okay, here's how we can progress this over X number of years. And instead it's stagnated and rotted a bit. And this is the chance for it to go right. Of course, the concern is if they have to have another year in League Two, how much more money he has to put in to do that. And you can't keep funding a club to this level in League Two, getting no reward, as much as you might be very well off. It just doesn't make any sense at all. So just a single jump. These next 11 games are super important. You can start to feel that. You can start to feel that strain, I think. I think it is well known within the sort of coaching staff about that, about how important it is, and you can feel it. And I think that it really does matter from all sorts of perspectives, but financially it matters too.
Absolutely, it does. It does feel like the main way to sort of what's the phrase I'm looking for? Something about a rising tide in boats, and that would be largely prompted by the success of the men's first team in getting themselves up a division. Hopefully, they can insulate the players from that pressure and just allow them to play to their best of their ability. A reminder, if you want Sam's in-depth coverage of Swindon Town, head to the Moonraker. Your subscriptions are welcome. That's what allows Sam to do his writing, researching, and being annoyingly good at transfer news stuff. So it's been a pleasure to chat to you, and we'll do it all again next week.